Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And who I am is Will Bluewater, OCO, Ginlii, Tuhiju, Tuhigu. Hello, cousins, I'm fine, and hope you're all good tonight. And yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a shock tonight, you know, about the church shooting, but we, Van Dorn, whatever you want to talk about tonight, this is your time. I don't like to interrupt much. If I'm going to keep it to a minimum. I'm sure I'll have questions, but, tell us about your spiritual path. That's what we're about here. We're about how to get in touch with the Creator. So if you've got any questions, you know, feel free to ask me. But say hello. Your mic's live.
All right, Will. Good evening. Will Bluewater. This is Van Dorn. And thank you for hosting me on this evening.
No.
You asked about my spiritual journey. It's a very colorful experience. I was born with a lot of memory intact for those who identify with that notion. And I tell people sometimes I was born awake. I'm not sure if that's an absolute truth, but it's something that I do say at times. And what it means to me is that I was born with memory. So what I do in my journey is I simply deliver messages that want to be delivered along, just come in many forms. They come in the form of poetry. They come in the form of artwork. They come in the form of quotable quotes. And I guess I could say that they come in the form of dialogues with people where spirit is pouring through me and I simply stand as witness to what's being said. So my journey led me to sacred geometry in 1989, a formal study of what we call sacred geometry. And so I'd like to talk about what sacred geometry is in my estimation. And the way I define sacred geometry is that I say it is a way humans have come to understand the divine ordering of the universe, that being that the universe is divinely ordered and that consciousness is at the center of this ordering. We have different names for that. Some people use creator. Some people use guide. There are many names for what I consider consciousness to be, that all-enveloping, all-embracing force that gives us life, sustains life. So once again, back to this question of what is sacred geometry. We have different schools of thought. But what I like to talk about is the fact that sacred geometry manifests in all ancient traditions. We have the circle, which is at the center of the conversation called sacred geometry. Without the circle, there would be no way to establish a pattern that's recognized as beautiful. So, Bluewater, I was actually imagining that you would have a list of questions to raise so that I could answer them. So if I am to speak extemporaneously, which is what I'm doing, I'll be glad to continue. But I really imagine.
Please
that
do.
Would have...
As much as I'd like to schmooze, I find the best way to drill down to it is just let a person talk but if I got a question, I will chime in. You're doing great.
All right. Well, so what happens is everybody is familiar with what we will call a supposed and believed dominant culture on the planet. And what we have been led to believe is that that dominant culture is of European origin and ancestry. Now, those of us who are witnessing what I'm saying know that that is a fallacy. And I'm saying this because we have terms such as sacred geometry. We have terms such as the golden proportion, divine proportion, golden rectangle, golden mean, and the term phi. All of those terms come to us through the filter of the Western mindset. And away from that Western mindset, all indigenous people, all ancient cultures engaged in a practice of recognizing beauty through geometric patterns, recognizing the manifestation of consciousness through geometric patterns, and recognizing the messages embedded in the patterns. So through the lens of my personal experience, of course, also dealing with the notion that I have been educated in the Western mindset, you know, I have these words before me, the words that I just spoke. And we look at pattern. We look at the sacred geometry. We look at the circle. We look at the relationship that the circle has to all ancient cultures. I guess we'll say cosmological maps. That's the term that I like to use. And we see that the circle is representative of the sphere. I say that the circle is not only representative of the sphere and, of course, by extension, the earth, but is also representative of the universe. So we have this two-dimensional form called the circle that is sort of like shorthand for the sphere or a globe and what have you. So we could be talking about a celestial body such as Earth or any other celestial body, or we could talk about this notion of the universe. It's a tricky proposition because many people have different ideas about what the universe is. I would even say the shape of the universe and what have you. So I'm not saying that I'm speaking in the absolutes. I'm simply saying that I'm speaking from a place of personal observation and the ideas that I have about what I have been observing. Throw that in for clarification here. So I have a number of friends that are listening in, and I also want to speak to this ancestry line of mine. I happen to have a lot of Native American ancestry on my mother's side and my father's side, and Tuscaroran, Cherokee, and possibly others. Then I have African ancestry, and of course I have European ancestry. So in the world that I live in, I'm labeled as an African American. But we know that that's a difficult proposition to say that looking at me, I'm African American. I probably look more like a very brown Native American than anything. Anyway, that's an aside here. So
I'm with you.
I would love to have a question right about now.
Sure.
Okay. Hello?
Well, I was just thinking.
All right.
Cherokees have long known that there are special bloodlines, and your program from before you were born, so you're one of those folks, and there's a few of us out here, not a whole lot of people listening, but that, to me, you know, that doesn't really matter as long as we're here to, as our Christian friends say, witness, you know, and that's what we're here for. It may not get a lot of traction, but slowly things are changing.
Things are changing, and they have to change inside of us first. We all know the phrase, we are the ones we have been waiting for. I use it every chance I get. Want to say a few more things about sacred geometry, and I'm actually going to read a statement that I wrote. I've already spoken some of those words, talking about the different names for sacred geometry or the different terms like the golden mean, the golden rectangle. But let me read something here. This phenomenon is associated with the ordering and organizing patterns of the universe. Energetically speaking, it can be viewed as the universe's pre-material template. To encounter works of art which embody these geometries can prove to be beneficial to one on a number of levels. Many have reported mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical enhancements resulting from viewing artifacts where these geometric understandings were integrated. The sacred architecture of our past embodies these geometries. This divine ordering is evident at every level of physical observation and experience. The subatomic, the atomic and molecular, the elements, and mineral kingdom. At the cellular and organic level, plant and animal kingdoms, at the planetary level, including solar systems, and at the galactic level. Humans are predisposed to creating patterns of beauty that contain the golden proportion. This proportion is known to be ubiquitous throughout creation. These creations are an expression of an inner divine order perceived by a faculty known as the inner eye, sometimes called the mind's eye, or sometimes referred to as the eye of the soul. My works of art are intended as vehicles of transcendence. They are to assist in a communion with the deepest part of one's being, thus serving as mandalas for spiritual transformation and regeneration. They are meant to be healing to myself and to the viewer. I have come to view these images as modern-day illuminated manuscripts written in the code language of life, which is called sacred geometry in some circles. Well, that's a few words from one of my artist statements that I wrote some time ago, and I guess I'll finish it by reading the last sentence. A careful practice of ancient canonical techniques for rendering visible signs of the unseen world are what sets these contemporary works of art apart from much of what has offered in the field of geometric abstraction. And here's a quote that I wrote many years ago. In beauty, there is truth. In truth, the divine is revealed.
Oh. It's powerful.
Something that I said earlier, I have been writing all of my life, and I guess when I was in my late 20s, I began to write a lot, and I've been recording these thoughts or these revelations that come to me and sharing them. For the most part, since the Internet came into existence via emails and things of this nature, I'm working on at least one or two books right now to share some of this, I guess you might say, insight or these inspirations. Yeah.
Well, you're doing a good job. Doing a good job. You ever heard of Jay Lone Wolf?
No, I haven't.
He's a monochromatic, I think it's right. Can only see in black and white shades of gray. And he's an art. just look him up. And my gosh, he's unbelievable, the stuff that he does. But he's Apache heritage. He grew up and his dad was a rabbi, and interviewed him years ago. And but he had Apache blood on the other side, and he actually knows the language pretty well, even though he learned it as a second language. I tell you, well, that's rare. But interesting guy. He does a lot of drumming circles and stuff like that down in Miami, it's art is very powerful. You know, might be somebody want to ask a question here. Is that okay, Van Dorn?
Oh, sure, that's fine. Yes.
Area code 704. Oh, would you like to ask Van Dorn a question, or are you just listening?
I would definitely like to ask him a question. Which form or shape or form do you most identify with, and why?
I appreciate that question. Are you familiar with what's called the flower of life?
Yes, I'm pretty familiar.
Okay. Well, that form is the form that I am most identified with, and I don't want to try to use words to explain how and why that is, but are you familiar with what's called the seed of life?
Yes.
Okay. Well, those six circles, it's the genesis of a lot of work that I do. It's sort of like at the foundation of a lot of work that I do. Not all of it. Of course, I use that six-fold symmetry. I also work with eight-fold symmetry, seven-fold symmetry, nine-fold symmetry, 10-fold symmetry, and 12-fold symmetry. I work with all of those numbers. So I work with the six, the seven, the eight, the nine, the 10, and 12. And, of course, 12 is an extension of six. So 12 renders a lot of beautiful patterning and what have you. 10, of course, is related to the DNA. And, well, 6 and 10 are actually related to the DNA double helix, but that's understood only in a few circles. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, she definitely did. Okay. We have one more.
I have another question. There's two of us on the air.
Welcome.
My question is, hi, thank you. Well, hello, first of all. So my question is, you said that you are most familiar with the circle of life, I mean the flower of life. How do you use that symbol throughout your day-to-day life, or how do you stay connected with it? That's the best way to answer the question, ask questions, yeah. So how do you stay connected with that shape in itself?
Well, I live surrounded by images, and I'm looking at an image in my office on the wall, and that image happens to be a flower of life pattern that is repeated seven times and makes up a mandala. Okay, so there's in 1990,
1999, I formalized an idea. And what I did is I took the flower of life and I created six more flower of life patterns around the central flower of life. So that means I have seven flower of life patterns that are in relation to one another in a similar way as the seven circles are in relation to one another inside of the seed of life. And so I'm surrounded by images, patterns that have sixfold symmetry related to the flower of life, and then I have other patterns, especially patterns that have to do with the number five. And I have so much artwork that I've created. I just rotate images, take some down, more up, that type of thing. But hopefully that answers your question.
Y'all are welcome to stay on the show as long as you want to. You know, just if you want to stay on. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. I'd like to add something to your question. What I have experienced as a practitioner of what we call sacred geometry is that once a person does the drawing, it becomes embedded in their energy field. And my wife and I have actually, for 3 years, we have been drawing the flower of life pattern, or the seed of life. We started drawing the seed of life pattern on the beach, okay? Like 18 feet in diameter. Some of them were like 12 feet in diameter, up to 18 feet in diameter. And then this past year, we drew the flower of life on the beach for the first time in the sand. And we've had very interesting responses to that pattern being drawn in the sand. And, of course, the tide comes and washes it away. So that's very interesting because it's sort of related to how the Tibetan monks create these absolute exquisite mandalas made out of sand, pull the sand, and then blow it all away. You have the temporal nature of reality as we understand it, evidenced in the creating of mandalas that are then disassembled or destroyed, if that word wants to be used. So once again, creating these mandalas by hand, the energetic signature of the mandala not only becomes something that is visible in my as a witness, but also the experience becomes ingrained and embedded in my psyche and in my energetic field. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you for the question. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Oh, appreciate you. Y'all stick around if you can, you know. Any more questions?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Back in.
You just hang on the line or can we just...
Call back.
Yeah, you can hang around and listen. Just feel free to hang around and listen. Okay, bye-bye. Oops. Sorry about that. Yeah, you're already off. Anyway, some good questions for you.
Yeah.
Oh, and always...
Nice
to know somebody's out there.
Yes. Is there another question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did.
Oh, no. All right, okay. So one of the things that I like to talk about is translating these two-dimensional patterns into three-dimensional forms. So there's a term that is known in the world in some circles as a Genesa crystal, G-E-N-E-S-A, and anybody can Google that if they want to. It turns out that these Genesa crystals are very special forms that can be built by anyone. And if anybody knows what a great circle is, it's the largest circle that can be drawn on the surface of a sphere. So we would call the equator a great circle. So if you take three great circles and join them together in a particular way, what you will have where they intersect, they will be intersecting where the six corners of an octahedron intersect. That's an octahedron being an eight-sided polyhedron that has eight equilateral triangles. That's one of the platonic solids that is talked about in for hundreds of years. So these Genesa crystals actually establish a certain kind of energetic signature that ends up being energy cleansing. So you can create these Genesa crystals, put them in your space, have them in your space, and they actually help to shift the energy signatures in your space. And there have been reports
that the larger you make the Geniza crystal, the larger area it covers. So I actually have three of these Geniza crystals hanging in my living room. One is made out of three great circles, one is made out of four great circles, and one is out of six great circles, yes. And you can make them out of more great circles, but those three are my favorite Geniza crystals. And all I can say is this house feels really good. And a lot of people come in, and the first thing that they say is, the energy in here is amazing.
So maybe it's
the geometry. I have a lot of sacred geometry. And one of the things that I'd also like to add is that when you have these two-dimensional patterns in your space, they actually change the energy. Because what is happening is that you're manifesting something that's called the golden proportion, which is the same energetic signature that manifests in everything that's living, everything that grows in nature. You can talk about the spiral arm of the Milky Way, the galaxy that we're in. You can talk about the Nautilus shell. Lots of people are familiar with the spiraling pattern in a Nautilus shell. You can talk about the inner ear, the human's inner ear. You can talk about the embryo of a human. All of these forms have this thing that's called the golden spiral. And in our bodies, we have the golden proportion throughout it. Once again, everything that grows in nature has the golden proportion in it, and it has something to do with the way that matter is informed by spirit. And that's what we're talking about. We talk about an etheric blueprint for the physical form. Everyone has an etheric blueprint for their physical form. Some people call it the dream body. Some people call it the astral body. But and the astral body has a blueprint for it. So every one of these bodies that we're operating, our mental body, our emotional body, our physical body, all of these bodies actually have a blueprint that basically tells it what to be, how to be, if that makes any sense. And,
well,
and sacred geometry helps to bring a certain harmonic frequency into the space. And so they act as, when you manifest this sacred geometry in your space, when you manifest these mandalas in your space, these sacred geometry patterns, what you're doing is you're enhancing the life force essence in your space. We do it with prayer. We do it through meditation. But we can also do it with these patterns. And I would even suggest that these patterns can be considered prayers and meditation. And so if anyone wants to take up the practice of creating sacred geometry patterns, they're doing themselves a great service because, once again, this energetic signature is reminding us of a sacred dimension that exists inside of us. And so it can be seen as sort of like a, I don't know how to talk about this. I'll just call it a reminder. You know, we can say that the sacred geometry patterns that we see outside of ourselves and we see in our environment that we create, we can call those reminders of a sacred dimension that exists within us. So being in a prayerful state is reminding us of a sacred dimension that we are and that we have access to. Creating these patterns does the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is so powerful. The word hologram comes to mind. Right now.
That's a beautiful term. And we talk about the fractal nature of the universe, and we talk about holograms, and most people have been given some ideas of what a hologram is. And there's some new talk out about this phenomenon called the photon, and how the photon is actually a gigantic representation of all that is. Maybe I shouldn't say a gigantic. It's a minuscule representation of all that is. And so we might even imagine that the universe is one gigantic photon, and that these small photons are like tiny particles in this gigantic photon, and that is bringing to mind the notion of the hologram, or the holographic nature of the universe.
Yeah, and I wish. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I wish. Yes.
No, I was just going to say, I wish I could be more conversant on this. The person I really wish we had on with you was Mark Borcherding, and Mark's our co-host. He's been off for a few months, but he loves to talk about this kind of stuff. And I'm sure you'll probably end up getting friended by him. Mark, IQ is probably up around 160 at least. I'd say he's smarter than I am. I'm 150. But yeah, it's a fascinating subject, and crop circles. It's just as far as prophecy goes. This was written. You know, it's in the New Testament. Signs in the earth, and
yeah. You
know, we're also getting a repeat of what happened in Noah's time, and. But anyway, go ahead. And I'll say that mostly because I need a cough. Hang on.
You mentioned holograms, and the word fractal, of course, comes to mind. And one of the things that I do is impress upon people that as soon as you create a geometric pattern, call it if it's a triangle or a square or a pentagon, these are all part of the fractal nature of what we conveniently call reality. Lots of people who experience these other dimensions, especially individuals who have used certain mind-altering substances, come back with stories about seeing lots of geometric patterns. And you can have the experience without the substances, of course, and the awareness and what have you. But lots of people report seeing all kinds of fantastic imagery under the influence of certain substances. I don't use any of these substances, never have, and I can't speak for the future. But the patterns are there, whether we can see them with our physical eyes or we see them with our spiritual eyes. And that's what's happening when people have these mind-altered experiences. They're actually seeing with another set of eyes, if I may. I call it the spiritual eyes, and they're able to see all of these amazing patterns that are part of the warp and weft of our universe.
I learned something interesting. I was in graduate school briefly, and there was a psychology course. I remember reading that about spirals and how the brain behind your closed eyes, just before you go to sleep, you're going to see a rotating spiral. And there's a term, psychological term for it. There's a lot of interesting things about spirals. The ghost dance was laid out, the original one. The one that people are dancing most places is just round dance, but it was a spiral. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, it's the most natural form of all. And it has to do, if you wanted to interpret it intellectually, we would say that the spiral represents a pathway that spirit travels, okay? So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yep.
Because sometimes I talk about this phenomenon, and I talk about how if you look at trees, you'll see trees either turn, they spiral upwards to the left or they spiral upwards to the right. Some it isn't so evident, and in some of them it's very evident that the tree is actually spiraling upwards. And if you look at, I was just at the beach maybe 2-3 weeks ago, 4 at the most, and I was intrigued with the fact that one of the conch shells that I had in one hand was a left-turning conch shell, and one of them in the other hand was a right-turning conch shell, which means that one spirals from the inside out to the left and one spirals from the inside out to the right. We actually have that in our bones, in our bodies. We have it in fruits and vegetation. If you look at the pathway that
branches take on trees and on plants that are growing, if you can observe that pathway, you'll see that the branches actually spiral. We have it in cone shells, obviously, in pine cones. We have it in so many places in nature. The sunflower, the head of the sunflower is a perfect example. They spiral to the left, they spiral to the right, the same thing with pine cones. And one pathway has more spirals than the other. One, the left-turning one has a different number than the right-turning one, but they're both in what's considered the Fibonacci sequence, which is a term that is used in some circles. We talk about adding 0 plus 1, you get 1. 1 plus 1, you get 2. 1 plus 2, you get 3. 2 plus 3, you get 5. 3 plus 5, you get 8. 5 plus 8, you get 13. Ad infinitum. The next one is 21. The next one is 34, I believe. The next one is 55. The next one is 89, and you just keep going. The next one is 144, which is, of course, a very interesting number in some of our cosmological maps. But once again, the spiral is every place in nature. And I mentioned the Milky Way's spiraling arms. We cannot be in existence without witnessing spirals. And once again, it has to do with how spirit moves in and through matter. At least that's how I talk about it.
Yeah. Friend of mine named Robert Shrewsbury. He's an autodidact metallurgist and who keeps a portrait of Hermes Trismegistus in his lab. And he has on a he's very clever. I'm not sure he graduated high school, but he's a little bit older than I am, so he'd be 65, 66. He was born among some of the polygamy people in southern Utah in the 50s, and it was the worst bunch, the LeBarons. His mother had married in, but his dad was a Kituwa Cherokee, and he and his brother, I mean, when times were hard, they'd go out in the desert and the skulls, one of which had a double row of teeth, back when it was still legal. But anyway, when he was 16, he went to Mexico and learned trades. And he was in Guatemala well before and during the Sandinista Revolution. Knew the Sandinistas personally, and the Miskito Indians. Kind of a situation had been for a long time. The Indians weren't allowed to own land. They had to have a white person representing them, and they picked him as a revolution. Anyway, but very, very wise man. And he's repeated a lot of really interesting experiments, including turning a very, very, very small, minute portion of lead into gold. And things can be done. He's another guy you'd love to get you on the phone with. Go ahead. And we do have a caller.
Okay, good. I'm ready.
Okay. Area code 336. Wow, we're getting a lot of callers. This is unusual. Yeah, go ahead. Area code 336. Say hello.
Hello, my name is Denine, and
hi.
I do not know much about sacred geometry. It was actually a topic that was introduced to me a couple of weeks ago at my boyfriend's mentor's house. So I have a question as far as the people who are first beginning to learn about this subject. What would you suggest, like certain books that they would read or what we should research in order to kind of be able to gain more information but the correct information?
Is there more questions? The name?
Yes, I'm here.
I didn't want to cut you off. Is there more to the question?
No, that it for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I ask because there are a lot of sources out there, and there could be said to be some misinformation. There is a nice book that I like. It's a beautiful book written by Robert Lawlor, Lawlor, and it is titled Sacred Geometry. And it's very accessible, and it has a lot of good information in it, okay? And I would consider that to be a good beginning. And then we have a guy named Michael, I'm drawing a blank now. Yeah, there's a book titled A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe. And Michael's last name is eluding me momentarily, but that's another wonderful book for beginners because it's quite comprehensive. It's called A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe, and the subtitle eludes me, and his last name eludes me right now, but his first name is Michael. And then the other one is Robert Lawlor. The title is Sacred Geometry. Those would be two books that I would consider being a good books for beginners, people who are just looking at sacred geometry.
Okay, outstanding. And we can't leave without talking about crop circles. I mean, come on.
Okay, that'll be fine with me. Yes.
Yeah. So, well, what do you think?
let me say it this way: what I suspect is true is that the crop circles are messages that are being manifest for us, an attempt to get our attention to be considerate of the content. Now, I'd like to speak about a movie that I saw last year, at least I think it was last year. It might have been earlier this year, but I think it was last year. The movie was titled Arrival, and I don't know if any of the listeners have seen it.
Oh, yeah. Several times.
Movie. Yes. Well, this is a very funny story because when I got to the ticket office to buy two tickets, one for myself and one for my wife, I asked the person, I would like two tickets to the movie Awakening. Now, that's what came out of my mouth, Now that was important to me, and I actually wrote about it. And what I wrote about it is this: after having seen the movie, it was obvious that the movie was asking humans on this planet to wake up and recognize that they do not have to be warring with one another, and that they might want to consider collaborating with one another so that they could be ready to assist another species in some future situation. Of course, that's what the movie was about. This group of heptoids had actually come here basically asking us as a species to consider changing our way of being, become collaborators as opposed to contenders, and so that we might be ready to assist them in the future. So, The Awakening was the title that I had imagined that the movie was going by when I got to the box office, even though I had been told that the movie was titled Arrival. Anyway, interesting. Yeah. But
I know about how spirit sometimes can literally put words in your mouth.
Exactly.
And I've seen some really spectacular instances. But go ahead.
Well, you know, that happens with me just about every day, you know, in terms of words being put in my mouth, all of these beautiful quotable quotes. And I look at them in awe and in amazement, but it's so common, you know, it's commonplace. It happens almost every day. So it's a stream of consciousness for me. But yes, the crop circles, as far as I'm concerned, are messages. And some people know how to read them and some people don't. And, of course, we have lots of misinformation afoot. We don't need to talk about that, give it no attention. But the fact is that there's a tremendous amount of information embedded in these crop circles. But what are your thoughts, if I may ask?
Oh, I just look at it from the standpoint. What I've always done is taken, prophecy out of the Bible, maybe maybe differently than, well, pretty much the same as fundamentalist Christians do, but I don't have an agenda, you know, like some people do. And then I've looked at as many sources from a prophecy from Native and Indigenous people, and then I compared them. And I was actually unknowingly finishing a work done by Mad Bear Anderson. And I didn't know till 96 that he was a person that appeared to me in a dream in 84. And he just said, when are you going to do something about Gardner Green? And I knew who he was. He was my Cherokee ancestor. When are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy? And he had a very pockmarked face. And I had already met his close friend, Rolling Thunder. Never really knew what Mad Bear looked like until years later. But that put me in this direction. And when I picked up the book that was published about him, first thing I looked was if there was in the index, you know, for any mentions of prophecy. And come to find out, he was doing exactly what I was in the middle of doing when he passed away in 85. And 85 is the year I started walking the red road. So, I don't know. I never met him in life, but I'm not the only person. He's, you know, he appeared to Marcine Quenzer and asked her to do a series of art having to do with the Great Law and Iroquois life. And, I don't know how we got off on that, but
no, I really appreciate that, because what happens is we are being guided from beyond. You know, we can talk about it from the ancestral realm. You know, there are many ways of talking about it, but the fact is that we are not separate from those that are in the spirit world. Many of us do not have a conscious awareness of our connection with those who are in the spirit world. I've had an experience recently with my Jim, who passed in 2015, and I stated to two or three friends that I wouldn't be surprised if the revelation that just landed on me was not a message from him. And so let me word that a different way. I guess that's the only way I know how to word it. It would not surprise me if he had whispered across the veil to me this idea that fell in my mind about what's next in this body of work that he and I have been working on for 25 years. So as we do have these connections, and it's a beautiful story that you shared with your ancestor coming to you in a dream and then meeting this person in a physical, you know, and working on the same thing when he passed in 85.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people like me, you know. It's just, well, hey, you know, you want to talk about, what do you know about your ancestry?
Well, what I stated earlier is
if you care to, you don't have to. Some people some people do.
Yeah, no, I would not go there. I appreciate asking. I can simply say that I feel quite certain that I have Tuscaroran and Cherokee ancestry.
I have no doubt either.
right. Yeah. I haven't done any research. You know, one of my dearest friends told me a little bit about the research that she had done on the Tuscarorans, and I said, "Oh, so that shines some more light on my journey, on my path." And but my father, if you were to see my father, you think that you were looking at a brown-skinned Cherokee. All of the features in his mother, you know, like I said, my mother's family and my father's family have a lot of Native American ancestry.
Hey, so, when you get a chance, get on Google and Google the words Chief Black Coat Cherokee, and you'll get an eyeful. Chief Black Coat Cherokee.
All right. Well, let me tell you a story. I'm glad you asked that.
Very obviously, you'll see what I'm talking about. And we intermarried. Probably 70 to 80% of black people have. It's just, of course you do.
Yes.
But yeah.
Oh yeah.
But go ahead.
let me tell you. This is an interesting aside. But I went to a retreat in Black Mountain at a conference center many years ago, and I'm not even certain what year it was. And now it could have been 20 years ago or so. And there was a shaman from Sierra Leone who was living in California who had come to the retreat, and he conducted a workshop. And so he asked everybody to go into silence and to basically commune with some of their ancestors. And when I did, I closed my eyes, and of course I was in the room with other people, but when I closed my eyes, a Native American manifested and was doing a dance, and I couldn't tell in the process of witnessing the dance through my third eye or my mind's eye if it was a war dance or if it was a peace dance or what have you. But that experience was quite real for me, and of course we were asked if we wanted to share what our experiences were, and I did. But I actually once looked up the name Chief Running Thunder because for some reason the name Chief Running Thunder came to me, and I said, well, okay, is Chief Running Thunder talking to me from the ancestral realm, or is that part of my lineage, or what? And I actually did some research, and I found someone, I think maybe someone still living, that was carrying that name, but I didn't bother to do any more investigation. But I actually have not sought information outside of myself, if that makes any sense to you.
Now, see, let me tell you something about that name. All I need to do is hear it, and I can tell you that what Grandfather Rolling Thunder told me was that people that have thunder in their name have remarkable spiritual abilities. And as a matter of fact, he called his friends the Thunder People. So anyway, there you go. Now you know something you may not have known before.
No, I appreciate that. I do appreciate that.
You bet.
After that name came to me, I actually adopted it, and so I nicknamed myself
Good.
Chief Running Thunder. Yeah. And I've been carrying that name for at least 20 years, you know? Yeah.
Excellent.
Anyway, thank you for sharing that with
me. Hey, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. But, well, look, why don't you, they're cutting us off promptly at 60 minutes, and I want to get a few words in before we go. But anyway, we on the page where people are listening, they can get through to you, and but go ahead and tell folks about your websites before we go.
Oh yeah, right. And thank you for asking that. I noticed
sure.
that we had a website that was referenced when you posted it. That's actually a website that's related to a group that I'm doing a retreat with on the 11th of November in Pickett's Mountain. So if anybody goes to that website, that is not my website. That's actually it's an organization that is putting on a retreat at Pickett's Mountain that I'm participating in on the 11th of November. My website happens to be www.vandornennett.com, and I'm sure that my name is posted on the information that you put out. And then another website is lightweavings.com. So that's lightweavings.com.
And I'll add those to the page.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, the word light weaving means weaving patterns into recognizable form. You know, weaving light into recognizable form. That's what it is. So it's a term that came to me several decades ago, and I've been using it ever since then. Yes, but thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Well, it's been a pleasure visiting with you, and actually a number of callers called in, but we do have a lot of people listening because I had a bunch of people giving me feedback saying that they would be on the call, so I'm delighted. Will people have a chance to listen to this later, or will it be archived?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay, beautiful.
absolutely. Right. And I could, if you you can embed it in your web page if you want to, and I can even tell you how to. If people go to a certain page, they'll hear it automatically. But whatever you want, just let me know.
Oh, but, beautiful.
Light weaving. I'm adding this as I'm going here. Lightweaving.com.
With an S on the end. Lightweaving.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, that'll be visible shortly.
Okay. Yeah, somebody else has Lightweaving. How many minutes do you say we have now?
We've got a few more. Go ahead.
Okay.
Let Spirit lead.
I just wanted to say thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening. I'm trusting that something that I said will answer some question for you about sacred geometry. And I'm delighted to have been a visitor here, a guest on your program.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But, okay. We got a few messages, but we'll sign off. And thank you so much, folks. And we'll see you all next week. Good night now.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they never still in a sacred manner I live to the heavens I gaze in a sacred manner I live. My horses are many, the high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams, in a sacred manner.